Hello, and welcome to Vanguard Audiobooks. I'm Alex Linder. You can find this and everything we record at vnnforum.com and eventually at alexlinder.com. Follow me on Gab, the only social media I use under my real name. Today we're going to start a new book, and we're going to do pages 1 to 18. And this book will be The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, The Leo Frank Case, The Lynching of a Guilty Man by the Nation of Islam. It's got a black cover. The book as a whole is, let's see, about 530 pages. Black cover, Star of David, a big three in the middle, picture of Leo Frank. The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 3. And they've done others, as we'll hear. Anyway, flipping it over, so title page. The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, and we're going to do basically the introduction today and get up to, let's see, about page, through page 18, pages 1 to 18 in this segment, so it won't take too awful long. The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, a series sponsored by the Historical Research Department of the Nation of Islam, that's Farrakhan's group, of course. Volume 1 was Jews in the Black Holocaust, that's slavery and Jews dominating the slave trade that brought Africans, West Africans, from Africa, where they were purchased from other blacks, to the New World, and some in North America, a lot in the islands, and probably the bulk in Brazil. Volume 2, How Jews Gained Control of the Black American Economy. And this is Volume 3, The Leo Frank Case, The Lynching of a Guilty Man. Copyright 2016 by Latimer Associates, Latimer. All rights reserved. Published 2016. Printed in the Nation of Islam. All praise is due to Allah, is the bottom line of the title page. And then the work proper begins with an epigraph, which is a quote from Leo M. Frank, the Jew, head of B'nai B'rith in Atlanta, and the would-be rapist murderer, an actual murderer. Jews lie about that and claim he was not, but he was the actual murderer of Mary Fagan, young white girl. Epigraph from Leo Frank reads, "Let us have the truth in this case, and that speedily. Let us play with all the cards on the table, for the issue involves human life. Let the detectives get right, lest they fall themselves into the grave which they have dug for another, for truth is on the march, and all things hidden will come to light." Frank actually said that when he was in prison, and he's knowing that he's guilty, and he is a perfectly representative Jew, and that he's lying from the bottom of his toes, the bottom of his heart, the bottom of his soul. He is lying. His defense team, which this was the biggest trial in Georgia state history, was one of the most expensive that could possibly be assembled. He had the best lawyers. They hired Goy detectives from the number two agency in the country. They hired Goy media liars to pretend that the truth had not been discovered and that their private lawyers were going to find it, but in fact the truth had already been found. And the Jews tried and failed to frame numerous blacks for the crime that their man Leo Frank committed. So here's this little homunculus Jew sitting in prison coming out with this garbage, which is duly circulated in the fawning favorable media. The Jews already had, 30 years into their arriving in the country. So we're talking about 1913, 14, 15. Jews came in mass after 1880. They already had a national network at that point. Flipping the page again, table of contents. We've got abbreviations, preface to the Secret Relationship series, introduction. That's what we're going to cover today, that part. And then it's not actually divided into chapters, just headings. And the first heading would be Leo Frank and Mary Fagan, Predator and Prey. Next section, the trial of Leo Frank, prosecution or persecution, Leo Frank's fight for redemption, answers to unanswered questions, the cross-examination of Leo Frank, what Leo Frank represents, and finally, epilogue and selected bibliography and index to close it out. As I said, 530 pages. Turning past the table of contents, abbreviations. The following abbreviations are used in the footnotes. Newspapers and magazines, Atlanta AC, Atlanta Constitution, AG, Atlanta Georgian, AI, American Israelite, AJ, Atlanta Journal, CD, Chicago Defender, Jeffersonian, the Weekly Jeffersonian, aka The Jeff, MJ, the Marietta Journal, NYT, the New York Times, WM, Watson's Magazine, WP, the Washington Post. So two prime national papers run by Jews, the Washington Post and the New York Times. Now, I believe back then there were three Atlanta dailies, and there was also the Weekly Jeffersonian and the Watson's Magazine by Tom Watson. These are the main ones covering it, the three dailies. And then the other, Marietta, was near where this took place and near Atlanta. And then the others would be Chicago. They probably picked that because that's, I think, Nation of Islam is more or less from around the Chicago area. So the, and American Israelite would be a Jewish publication. So those were the abbreviations for newspapers and magazines. And we've got books, pamphlets, journal articles, legal documents, archive material. And I'll read through that, maybe a page. Argument of Hugh Dorsey. Hugh M. Dorsey, Argument of Hugh M. Dorsey, Solicitor General, Atlanta Judicial Circuit, at the trial of Leo Frank, charged with the murder of Mary Fagan. That's all in italics. Macon, Georgia, 1914. I believe we have recorded that as an audiobook. Also known as Dorsey's Closing Argument, I should pause to say here, this parade that the Jews have come up with 100 years after the fact, which is a musical that is about Leo Frank, makes the prosecutor Hugh M. Dorsey, who was an upright, honest, good man, into a bad guy, a liar, and a fraud. So Jews are an intergenerational, multi-generational, genetic criminal clan that creates false histories and reinforces each other. So you have academics, you have popular writers, you have journalists, you even literally have people who write plays, and they're all creating, fostering, and propagating and making popular the same lies. And these lies always serve Jews and are anti-white. They will defame anybody to protect their own, even when their own is a pedophile, rapist, murderer, as was Leo Frank. A nasty little homunculus who was the star bad guy of his own story. So anyway, we're reading through the books, pamphlets, journal articles, legal documents, archive materials. Next, brief. In the Supreme Court of Georgia, fall term 1913, Leo M. Frank, plaintiff in error versus State of Georgia, defendant in error from Fulton Superior Court at the July term 1913, brief of the evidence in italics, 1913. So stuff from the trial. Dinnerstein, Leo Frank case. Leonard Dinnerstein, the Leo Frank case, 1966. Reprint, Athens, Georgia, University of Georgia Press, 1987. And he's one of the more prominent liars of the old school. They come out with a new book about this every, say, 20, 25, every generation they have a fresh liar. So the Jewish lies are impacted over the 100 years since this incident happened. So they have literally a legacy of 100 years of lying about this case. And it really is a perfect microcosm for understanding the mentality and the political, social, racial reality of the tribe called Jews. They are a race of evil liars. And there's no other way to understand them. Fry and Thompson, The Silent, in italics, The Silent. Robert Seitz Fry, S-E-I-T-Z, and Nancy C. Thompson, italics, The Silent and the Damned, The Murder of Mary Fagan and the Lynching of Leo Frank. That's from 1988, New York, Cooper Square Press, 2002. Next, Golden, A Little Girl is Dead. Harry Golden, A Little Girl is Dead, Cleveland, Ohio, World, 1965. So the publisher location year. Hertzberg, Strangers, Stephen Hertzberg, Strangers Within the Gate City, The Jews of Atlanta, 1845 to 1915. Philadelphia, Jewish Publication Society of America, 1978. Again, these are all sources they're using. Lasker, Interview. Albert D. Lasker, interviewed by Boyden Sparks, transcript 1937, Albert D. Lasker Collection, Charles Deering McCormick Library of Special Collections, Northwestern University Library in Evanston, Illinois. Now, McCormick was one of the big industrialists that made Chicago back before 1900. And there's a McCormick Exhibition Center there in Chicago where they put on a lot of trade shows. I used to attend a few of them. Lasker was like the father of, advertising in the U.S. He styled himself, and he was the big name called down to conduct the defense of Leo Frank, or at least arrange the funding of that defense. He wasn't a lawyer himself. He was like a PR guy, similar to Edward Bernays, father of public relations. Bernays styled himself Freud's nephew, and Lasker was like father of advertising. He considered himself. So rich, powerful Jews arranged favorable media coverage and a first-rate defense for their boy, the pedophile murderer. That's how thick Jews are. Thick as thieves could well be drawn from Jew experience or others' experience with Jews. So his interview is on file at the Northwestern, is a primo liberal arts university around Chicago. Next, Lindemann, The Jew Accused. Albert S. Lindemann, The Jew Accused, Three Anti-Semitic Affairs. Dreyfus, Bylus, Frank. Dreyfus was the French guy, French Jew, charged with treason. Bylus was, I believe, charged with, was it ritually sacrificing a goy child? I believe that was a case in Russia. Of course, they claim it's a lie. And Frank, Leo Frank. Albert Lindemann also wrote, I believe he's the one who wrote Esau's Tears, which somewhat overlaps Kevin MacDonald's material in Culture of Critique and the other two of his trilogy, in that it portrays Jews. And not wholly favorably, even though Lindemann himself is a Jew. But in this case, they're using The Jew Accused, Three Anti-Semitic Affairs, and that's Cambridge University Press, 1993. Next, Mangum, U.S. Supreme Court, Frank v. Mangum, 237, U.S. 309, 1915. Leo M. Frank, Appellant, v. C. Wheeler Mangum, M-A-N-G-U-M, Sheriff of Fulton County, Georgia, number 775, argued February 25th and 26th, 1915, decided April 19th, 1915. Next, Melnick, Black Jewish Relations, Jeffrey Melnick, Black Jewish Relations on Trial, Leo Frank and Jim Connolly in the New South, and Connolly was one of the two blacks Leo M. Frank's defenders tried to frame for his crime. And that's Jackson University Press of Mississippi, 2000. Next, Oney. And I believe Oney would be the big Jew generational propagandist liar masquerading as academic after Dinnerstein. So Dinnerstein, 20, 30 years ago, now Oney is the latest Jew expert in lying about this. ATDSR, Steve Oney, And the Dead Shall Rise. The Murder of Mary Fagan and the Lynching of Leo Frank, all in italics. New York, Pantheon Books, 2003. So Dinnerstein and Oney are the two main academic frauds who are perpetrating lies about Leo Frank from the Jew point of view. Next, Fagan Keen, The Murder. Mary Fagan Keen, The Murder of Little Mary Fagan. Far Hills, New Jersey, New Horizon Press, 1987. I believe we recorded that as an audiobook, is already up. As we've done with the trial, most of the trial material. Pinkerton Detective Agency Investigation Reports, filed by various Pinkerton detectives, May 1913, Leo M. Frank Papers, American Jewish Archives, Cincinnati, Ohio. and they were the Goyish detective agency hired by the Jews to vindicate their man, or actually to frame him. And they were like the number two, I forget who the number one was, but one of the biggest detective agencies in the U.S. And finally, the last one is Samuels Nightfell. Charles and Louise Samuels, Nightfell on Georgia, New York, Dell, 1956. That's closed on page X. Moving on, preface to the Secret Relationship series. Epigraph, we have no documentable evidence of anti-Semitism on the part of the Temples of Islam movement or Elijah Muhammad. That's from Arnold Forster, Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith. Elijah Muhammad is the guy who created Nation of Islam. And again, this is preface to the Secret Relationship series, all these books about the real facts of the relationship between blacks and Jews. And the text of this reads, in 1991, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, National Representative of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Nation of Islam, NOI, released the first of several volumes in the scholarly series titled The Secret Relationship Between Jews and Blacks, or Blacks and Jews. A Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, a series of volumes of research by NOI. This research was prepared by the NOI's Historical Research Department in response to the increasingly vicious calumnies made against Minister Farrakhan by leaders of the Jewish community. Minister Farrakhan and the Nation of Islam hold the theological belief that black people of America are the real children of Israel, and that those who claim to be Jews are in error. Revelations 2:9-3:9. Should be Revelation, not Revelations, and have no genealogical or prophetic relationship to the Jews of the Bible. He further states that the Jewish people are among the white historical oppressors of black people, and that the special relationship, quote-unquote, they claim to have formed with some black leaders is deceptive, exploitative, and deleterious to black independence and black progress. Certainly true. The problem here is they don't make enough distinction. They more or less lump in Jews with whites. Even though they would seem to name them, they still consider them sort of a white, and that's wrong. Jews are wholly independent from whites. In its 334 pages, The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, Volume 1, conclusively proved the veracity of the minister's position, revealing that Jews were, in fact, at the very center of the transatlantic slave trade. As slave traders, financiers, shippers, and insurers, and among the leading plantation owners and international marketers of the products of African slave labor, such as sugar, cotton, and tobacco. In the American Civil War, Jews had joined the Southern Confederacy as strategists, financiers, and soldiers willing to die and kill to maintain black slavery. So Jews are dominating not just the slave trade, but all the stuff that slaves produces. They're the middlemen who are buying up the products, the tobacco and the cotton and the sugar, as well as going to Africa and buying the slaves, catching them or buying them and bringing them back over to the New World. They dominate all aspects of this stuff. Turning on to page XII. Further, this information was meticulously researched from texts written by prominent Jewish scholars and historians, such as Dr. Jacob Rader Marcus, R-A-D-E-R, Dr. Mark Lee Raphael, Dr. Bertram W. Korn, with a K, Dr. Abraham Karp, Dr. Herbert I. Bloom, Isaac S. Emanuel, and Leo E. Turitz, T-U-R-I-T-Z, all of whom were also rabbis. It says in italics. So they're documenting all this from Jewish sources. Today, the secret relationship between blacks and Jews can be found in the collections of every major academic library, including those of every Ivy League college and university. Since its publication in 1991, the critics of the Nation of Islam have quietly abandoned the persistent mythological claim that Jews were either co-sufferers or innocent bystanders in the Black Holocaust, which they mean slavery by. The second volume of The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews, released by Minister Farrakhan in 2010, How Jews Gained Control of the Black American Economy, and its companion volume, Jews Selling Blacks, Slave Sale Advertising by American Jews, presented in nearly 700 pages new evidence that challenges and corrects the prevailing interpretations of the history of blacks and Jews in the post-slavery American South. The research confirms that after the emancipation of black slaves, Jews helped create and defend the racially oppressive Jim Crow system in the American South and were among the leading traders in America's cotton economy. The American labor movement is shown to have had deep Jewish roots and a devastating long-term effect on black economic progress. The Ku Klux Klan and other white terrorist groups were the premier enforcers of white supremacy and had Jewish involvement at every level, as supporters, members, and financiers. The first two volumes of The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews contain nearly 1,000 pages of research that uncovers a history of oppression Jews had successfully kept hidden from view. The present third volume in the series, The Leo Frank Case, The Lynching of a Guilty Man, examines a tragic incident largely unknown to most American blacks, but reverentially regarded by American Jews. That incident occurred in Atlanta, Georgia, between 1913 and 1915, and involved a B'nai B'rith leader and factory manager named Leo Max Frank. He was tried and convicted of murdering a 13-year-old Gentile girl and sentenced to die. An unknown posse stormed the prison and lynched him, making Frank reputedly the only Jew ever lynched in America. The case became an international cause célèbre for Jews, most of whom believe Frank was the victim of anti-Semitism. Several books and hundreds of articles have been written on the tragedy, which has now become a central pillar of American Jewish identity. For 100 years, Jews have insisted that the Leo Frank case is emblematic of their history of suffering and victimization in America. Moreover, the case so profoundly affected the relationship blacks had with American Jews that it can be said that, before the Leo Frank affair, Jews were the black man's open enemy. After the Leo Frank affair, Jews were the black man's best friend. Indeed, the Leo Frank case is that pivotal point in black history when the Jews' history of slave trading, ownership of cotton, sugar, and tobacco plantations, Ku Klux Klan terrorism, and Jim Crow apartheid was deliberately replaced with a new narrative of shared persecution, civil rights coalition, and political common cause. Consequently, an honest assessment of the black-Jewish relationship must include a comprehensive examination of the Leo Frank case and its profound effect on both blacks and Jews. Significantly, the Jewish demand that scholars focus on the Leo Frank case history, leads to an unanticipated treasure trove of unexplored documents and records and documents that unlock the most confidential operations of the Jews' highest leadership circles. As the Jewish people united in the international fight to overturn Leo Frank's murder conviction, considerable data about their activities leaked into the public record. Information so extensive and so revealing that its very existence is unique in the annals of Jewish history. The Leo Frank case offers a unique window into the thinking and strategizing of the leaders of the Jewish people. Leo Frank was not of the rank-and-file Jewish citizenry. As the president of the Atlanta chapter of the Fraternal Order of B'nai B'rith, he was arguably the most important Jew in the South. Jews considered him as having, in effect, diplomatic immunity within the white rulership of the Jim Crow South, so his arrest, trial, and conviction shocked, offended, and activated Jews at the highest level. White Gentiles and Jews had been intimate partners in Dixie's slavery system from which they both derived vast riches. They had freely intermingled in the social, political, and economic culture of the White South, but the Leo Frank trial and conviction set up a showdown like no other in Gentile Jewish history. All the major Jewish leaders in banking, media, clergy, law, business, and politics mounted a massive operation to free Leo Frank. And the racial ruthlessness of their efforts is laid bare through a massive cache of documents, including personal letters, rabbinical sermons, official reports, interview transcripts, legal filings, and newspaper reports. They tell a sordid tale of purchased testimony, the planting of evidence, racial scapegoating, extreme expressions of racism, financial manipulations, bribery, retaliation, threats to witnesses, and even attempted murder. The case is further marred by the academic world's willful concealment of this damning evidence, a deception that continues to this very moment, and not just the academy concealing it, but journalism concealing it by lying the opposite or gaslighting, that their man who is a pedophile murderer is actually the victim rather than the perpetrator. From the trial of Leo Frank in 1913 to his lynching 2 years later, records reveal a methodology only hinted at and speculated on by such purportedly anti-Semitic texts as the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion, Henry Ford's International Jew, which we've done as an audiobook, both of those, and Martin Luther's The Jews and Their Lies, that too, all of whose theses were undermined not only by an often conspiratorial and outside-looking-in perspective, but also by their lack of documentation and specificity. No other example exists that so publicly pitted Jews and Gentiles in a test of wills like the Leo Frank case. Should be as the Leo Frank case. And Jews practically demand that the outside world investigate the case to draw an accurate portrait of the American Jewish identity, how they have suffered and overcome racial and religious persecution. In 2015, Jonathan Greenblatt, the newly appointed National Director of the Anti-Defamation League, chose the 100th anniversary of Frank's lynching, August 17, 1915, to announce a major national initiative against anti-Semitism. And in his remarks, Greenblatt invoked the name of Leo Frank multiple times. Without question, the case is the central pillar of Jewish American identity. So it really is like the Holocaust in minor. It's something where they are exactly reversing the truth. And they really are fairly characterized as a race of liars. Last sentence, or last paragraph. As we take a microscope to this little-known but highly significant event in Black Jewish history, we first examine the essential details of the crime, seeking the truth as to who really killed Mary Fagan. Next, we unwrap this mystery in such detail that new and powerful truths are revealed that upset the standard narrative. And then we expose the untold story of the Jewish fight to free a B'nai B'rith leader who tried to get away with murder. And now we have the introduction proper, which is about 4 pages, and then that will conclude this session. Introduction on page 15. We get an epigraph. The arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Martin Luther King, inspired by 19th century minister Theodore Parker. Inspired by, yeah, King ripped off nearly everything he ever said. And what happened to Mary Fagan was terrible. What happened to Leo Frank was even more terrible. Harry Golden, a Jew. In 1913, Jim Crow, Georgia, a wealthy and powerful white man, no, he's a Jew, was charged with the brutal rape and murder of his employee, a 13-year-old white girl. He vehemently denied the charge and accused two of his black employees of the crime, the janitor and night watchman, Jim Conley and Newt Lee. He had the finest lawyers in the South and two of the nation's most expensive private detective firms at his disposal. The governor of the state of Georgia resolutely supported him. And the world's most important newspaper vigorously backed him. Yet at the end of a 2-year ordeal, the white man was lynched, sick, the Jew was lynched by a mob of fellow white men, and the black man went free. That outcome is unique in American racial history. And so we begin that incredible story. And they made a big mistake by not calling him a Jew, pretending that Jews are whites. Jews don't say they're whites. They hate the notion that they're whites. They only pretended to be white, or jited. Jiting is what they do, and they pretend, hello, fellow whites, when it was to their social advantage. But they themselves know and believe that they are not white, and that's what the genetic evidence shows. These facts are indisputable. On August 25th, 1913, Leo Max Frank, the Jewish manager of an Atlanta pencil factory and president of the local chapter of the Jewish fraternal organization, B'nai B'rith, was found guilty by a Georgia jury and sentenced to death by hanging for the brutal murder of one of his employees, a 13-year-old white Christian girl named Mary Fagan. For the next 2 years, Frank appealed the guilty verdict 13 separate times, and all the appellate courts, including the United States Supreme Court, upheld the verdict and the death sentence. 13 appeals, all upheld, including the Supreme Court, upheld the verdict and the death sentence. On June 21st, 1915, a day before Frank was scheduled to hang, Georgia's governor, John M. Slayton, commuted Frank's death sentence to a life imprisonment to be served in the state's penitentiary. On August 17, 1915, more than a dozen men seized Frank from the state prison, drove him to the murdered girl's hometown, and hanged him from a tree. He was one of only 3 Jews to have ever been lynched in America. And beyond those established facts, all agreement ends. The trial and aftermath made major waves in the American judicial system when the peculiar circumstances of that trial opened a significant fissure in the very foundation of American white supremacy. Blacks had long been barred from participation in any, quote, legal proceeding, except as defendants, and their testimony, especially in cases involving the fate of white persons, was simply deemed invalid. Despite those hard and fast Jim Crow laws and customs, Leo Frank became the first white man in the South to be convicted of a capital offense in a trial that featured the prominent testimony of black witnesses. That fact alone made the Frank case revolutionary. The trial placed several of Frank's black employees on the witness stand to contradict directly and convincingly the claims of their wealthy white Jewish employer. So you have a high-ranking black and you have high-ranking Jew and low-level blacks, and you have a white jury, and the jury finds the blacks more plausible than the Jew, even though the Jew has this highest-priced legal talent behind him. So pretty good chance that the blacks are telling the truth and the Jews are lying. Because every social index and pressure would have been to doubt the blacks. But their testimony was strong and unshaken because it was the truth. By the admission of the black testimony, the Frank case could easily have been seen as a major advance in the long civil rights struggle of blacks in America and a bellwether of future progress. Jews, however, did not see this judicial reform as a progressive action at all. The unprecedented deviation from the South's racist norms stunned Jews, causing them to reassess their relationship with their fellow Caucasians and to question whether they too had become vulnerable to the iniquities of American Jim Crow, a system which Jews had helped to establish and from which Jews had derived many, many social, political, and especially financial benefits. Make the point that the term racism hadn't even been invented. at this point. It wasn't until the later 20s it was invented and popularized by Jewish communists in Europe. Before racism, there were just racial differences that everyone recognized, and there was no social pressure against speaking them and observing them and respecting them and making them the basis of solid law. In fact, most Jews believed that the acceptance of Negro testimony was a most egregious assault on their rights, that the court's validation of blacks as witnesses was the proof that the white Gentiles had turned their backs on them, and that anti-Semitism was responsible for Frank's conviction. Dr. Stuart Rockoff, R-O-C-K-O-F-F, summarized the Jewish point of view. Block quote. In the South, white defendants were generally protected from the testimony of black witnesses or the judgment of black jurors. Yet Frank did not receive this protection, and he was convicted and ultimately lynched based on the testimony of a black witness. Thus, social whiteness for Southern Jews could be provisional and limited. Footnote. Stuart Allen Rockoff, Jewish Racial Identity in Pittsburgh and Atlanta, 1890 to 1930, PhD dissertation, University of Texas at Austin, 2000, page 218. Further fueling this racial bonfire is the aggressive Jewish claim that the actual murderer of the young white Mary Fagan was Frank's own hired janitor, James Jim Connolly. Connolly's impressive witness stand testimony was easily the most damaging blow to Frank's trial defense. These dual insults, the tainting of the moral image of a Jewish leader and the belief that a white Jew paid the ultimate price for the crime of a black man, have haunted and vexed Frank's Jewish advocates for a century. Blacks are far less familiar with the Leo Frank case, even though it is arguably as important to black progress as Plessy v. Ferguson, Brown v. Board, or even Lincoln's 1863 Emancipation Proclamation. The black janitor whose testimony became central to Leo Frank's conviction became the most quoted black person in American history up to that time. That's remarkable. Most quoted black person in American history, the black janitor who testified against Leo Frank. More of his words appeared in print in the New York Times than those of W.E.B. Du Bois, Marcus M. Garvey, and Booker T. Washington combined. So this was a big, big, big deal, this trial. Most significant, the Leo Frank case influenced critical events in the history of the relationship between blacks and Jews in America. I think I passed over another. There it is. And then most significant, the Leo Frank case influenced critical events in the history of the relationship between blacks and Jews in America. And then there's three bullet points. First, Frank's lynching became a symbol of Jew hatred in America, footnote 3, and motivated Jews to build alliances with oppressed blacks, resulting in the fabled and controversial Black-Jewish Alliance, footnote 4. So footnote 3 and 4. 3. ADL's History in Brief, The Beginning, 1913, section of the 2003 press release titled ADL Marks 90 Years of Action and Advocacy, 2003, Anti-Defamation League, and then a URL. 4. Melnick, Black-Jewish Relations, 8, 39-42, 130. Yvonne D. Newsom, A House Divided, Conflict and Cooperation in African-American Jewish Relations, PhD dissertation, Northwestern University, 1991, page 86. Hasia Diner, H-A-S-I-A, In the Almost Promised Land, : American Jews and Blacks, comma, 1915 to 1935. That's from 1977, reprint, Baltimore, M.D., Johns Hopkins University Press, 1995. David Levering Lewis, Parallels and Divergences, Assimilationist Strategies of Afro-American and Jewish Elites from 1910 to the Early 1930s in Strangers and Neighbors, Relations Between Blacks and Jews in the United States, editors Maureen Adams, And John Bracey, Amherst, University of Massachusetts Press, 1999, page 334. Now, the second of the three bullet points. The Leo Frank case gave the nascent Anti-Defamation League of B'nai B'rith its raison d'etre, its reason for being. Fifth footnote there, Dinnerstein, Leo Frank case, 157, B'nai B'rith News, October 1913. So the ADL came into existence as a result of the Leo Frank affair. The ADL would become the main representative body of American Jews and the Jewish organization most aggressively involved in black internal affairs. Third bullet point. The Leo Frank case was claimed to be the pivotal event that ignited the explosive growth of the terrorist Ku Klux Klan, which mushroomed to the largest size in its history. It had an effect on it. It was mainly the birth of the nation, that movie, led to its second wave. The first wave was in the 1860s. So it was reborn in, say, the 1920s. And this was part of the impulse that pushed it, although the birth of the nation was larger. And finally, back to the text proper, the last two paragraphs before we conclude today and the end of the introduction. Incredibly, the Jewish Leo Frank and his multi-ethnic, multi-racial saga are at the root of those signal events in black history. So why has this case become so critically important, even a century after its tragic conclusion? How has the lynching of this particular Jewish man superseded in significance the thousands of black hangings, burnings, and shootings to become the symbol of lynching in America? Why is the scrutiny of this case vital to a true and accurate understanding of racism in America? An objective and unemotional review of this forgotten tragedy will certainly result in pain for some, relief for others, but once the hidden and suppressed truths are uncovered and revealed, all will be enlightened by a fresh analysis of this fateful event in American history. And that's where we're going to stop for today, page 18, done with the introduction, and get us into the book and understand the context comes out of, which is the Jews make up lies about Farrakhan, and they lie about black history, they lie about being their friends, and what they want and what they do for blacks hurts the black community, and blacks recognize this. Farrakhan and NOI are one of the few forces fighting back, and part of their fighting back is researching accurate history, and they document from Jewish sources that exactly the opposite of what Jews claim today in their propaganda and the media and academia is the truth. Jews are an evil race of liars. And there is no better microcosmic demonstration of that fact than the Leo Frank affair. I want to thank you for being with me today. My name is Alex Lender. Again, you can find this recorded at viennainforum.com and after a time at alexlender.com. And I'll be back with you again with more real soon.